Today on Maine Calling, turning creativity into action. Have you ever had a really good idea that you didn't follow up on? Why not? Maybe you didn't know where to start or thought it would be too stressful, too hard. Were you afraid you wouldn't succeed? Lots of us have good ideas, but few follow through on them. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn about ways to turn creativity into action. We're joined by a Yale researcher who has written a book about the science behind creativity. She says creativity starts with a choice. She and the founder of Portland's Open Bench Project discuss how to nurture your instincts, overcome fears and creative blocks, and foster innovation. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and offering custom homes in Quarry Cottages, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And by Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. When people hear the word creativity, they often think of the arts. But being creative extends to many fields and even to day-to-day life. Today, our topic is turning creativity into action, whether it's starting a business, inventing a product, or doing something else creative, and also how to nurture your own creative instincts. My guests today are Dr. Zorana Ivcevic Pringle, who is the author of the new book, The Creativity Choice, The Science of Making Decisions to Turn Ideas into Action. She is a senior research scientist at Yale University. And Jake Ryan, who is the founder of the Open Bench Project, which is a makerspace in Portland. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you turned a creative idea into reality? Do you have insights about the creative process that you would like to share? Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. Dr. Pringle, I'll start with you and ask you, about this idea, so many of us think of creativity in terms of painting a painting or writing a song or something like that. But you say no, creativity is something that we all, I'm going to ask you this, are we all creative or just some of us creative? And how do you frame it? How do you think about what it means to be creative?
First of all, Jennifer, thank you for having me. I love Maine Calling personally, and I'm a listener myself, so it's great to be a guest. In thinking about creativity, certainly the arts are creative. So it is not that the arts are not creative, but it doesn't end there. We can be creative in virtually every aspect of life, any domain of work. And you can just go on with examples, you know, from starting businesses from your introduction to doing something in a different way in a job that you already have to doing something different with your children or in your relationships to enliven them and make them richer. Scientists think of creativity as something that is in the same time original in some way, and we can talk about what that means because it gets really interesting, and also effective towards whatever goal or vision we have.
All right. Well, Jake, I want to bring you into the conversation as well. The Open Bench Project is a makerspace, which means you're full of all sorts of great tools, but it's really about more than just a place to access tools, right?
Yes. It's well, first of all, yes, thanks. It's great for being here, Jennifer. Yeah, it's really, I often refer to us as a clubhouse of people who make things. So I try to focus on the clubhouse part of it because it's really about getting together with other people who have a tendency to take action on ideas. And yeah, the more people you have with the more diverse views, the sort of richer the conversation gets.
Well, one of the things that you talk about in your book, Sarana, and we've thought about generally is that being creative can be scary. It can mean taking a risk, taking a jump, being uncomfortable. And I'm wondering how you think about framing that discomfort and overcoming that fear.
I have heard often people say that to be creative, you have to be comfortable with discomfort. But to be honest with you, I don't even know what it means. How can you be comfortable with discomfort? And even if you somehow figure out what it means, how do you do that? So instead, let's talk about instead. And instead, yes, people sometimes find it scary. There are lots of doubts we have. And there are two kinds of risks we perceive in trying to even contemplating whether to do something. And one is, can I do it? Do I have that ability? Do I have what it takes? And the other one is, well, what are other people going to say about it? Are they going to think this is silly? Are they going to think I'm, you know, in the work context, stepping on toes or whatever it could be the case? And I think it becomes an issue of not being comfortable with it necessarily, but being able to tolerate that discomfort of saying, well, this is important to me. Therefore, I'm going to accept that part of it is the discomfort. And we can get better at that tolerance and acceptance. I study the psychology of emotions, and we can learn to manage that. And we can also get more confident, grow in our confidence, creative confidence through action, bringing it back to Jake and what makerspaces do. You do things, and by doing, you learn that you can.
Mm-hmm. And Jake, how big of a factor is fear for people who come to you? Or are you sort of a bubble of people who have sort of decided they're not going to lean into the fear, but lean into the possibility?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. Everybody comes in with their own dispositions, but I will often say, I mean, we have a, you know, our place here is filled with a lot of sharp and pokey and hot things. And I'll often describe the shop as, you know, the scariest tool we have here is our sheet of white paper. So I think that when you give somebody the chance to get going and they have an infinite number of things that they can do, it tends to really paralyze people. So yeah, it can be tricky and scary. Sometimes I just tell them, just make a piece of junk, just get started. It's really about getting started.
And that's interesting because this melds with your research, right, Sarana? Because he says, just get started. And you say, and really the premise of the book is that being creative is a decision. It's a choice.
It's a choice to get started. And once we get started, all kinds of things happen. When I talk to my son, who's now 16 years old, but throughout his childhood, if I wish him to get one thing from my work, is that first ideas are not the best ideas. So you start with something, get that out of the way, and you are going to get somewhere else. And also when you get started, you have that scary white sheet of paper or white screen, blank screen, whatever it is, and you don't know where to go. But once you start going, directions and perspectives emerge, especially when you have a community that you can draw on.
Yeah, and this is something really that ties you all together, Sarana. You talk about the social aspect of creativity in your book. And Jake, you are a place where people come together. And it's interesting to me because I think a lot of people think of somebody who's creative as sort of like a solitary genius, or somebody who's really, really creative as somebody who's comes up with something in a studio, or, you know, we think of Thomas Edison working, you know, without sleep in his little, his own space. But what you all both lean into and believe in, and Jake, I'll turn to you, is that creativity is social. Creativity is about community.
Yeah. I'll often say to people, you know, I live right near the open bench, and I'll say, you know, I have a barn filled with tools at my house, but I don't make there because when I make there, I only have my idea. But when I make here, I have your idea. So I think having lots of people together, just it really pushes you to think in new ways that you're just not accustomed to thinking. And, you know, most ideas, frankly, I don't really know too many ideas that are really, you know, the solitary genius idea. It's usually just an aggregation of a lot of different things that you've seen or experienced. And then, you know, what makes it unique. And, you know, back to what Zorana was saying about, you know, creativity, you know, creative things are original, is that, well, you have a unique perspective. And so regardless of what the problem space is, you've got a viewpoint that is valid, that should be explored. And it's just helpful to have a lot of people around to help you sort of nugget out a bunch of different things.
Yeah. And that's tricky, isn't it? Go ahead, Zorana. Yeah.
I would actually go even bolder in the statement, Jake, and say that there is no creativity that is solitary. Yeah. even when the activity itself is solitary. I wrote a book. I was the only one writing a book. There were no ghosts involved. So I was writing it, but you don't come up with ideas in a vacuum. Ideas come from, in my case, 20 plus years of interaction with my scientific community, with the community from organizations with which I consulted, people who I interviewed for the book. Ideas come in a social context, by necessity.
I'm wondering, Jake, if you, you know, you have people you work with who've come because they, gosh, want to learn how to weld, or they've got an idea for a project and you may have the tools. Do you ever see when somebody is there at the makerspace making something that's tangible, that somehow their experience there affects their life in another way that they didn't expect?
Oh, I mean, sure. People have started businesses here because they started hustling, you know, or putting together a project. You know, I would like to think that everybody comes here, gets their life affected in a way. I think that the primary thing that people get from the making experience is really just agency. The fact that you can have an effect on the world. Once you start seeing that you can manifest ideas, you just believe that you can just do that, and it becomes a sort of a natural way for you to move through the world. So that, yeah, I would say everybody here gets affected by that. That's sort of our goal, is to help people understand they can do that.
And you know, Zorana, we started this conversation by saying creativity isn't just for people in the arts, but you have found that people who are creative in many kinds of places in the world often do have a hobby that's arts or crafts or something like that.
The key finding in research is that those ideas come from different perspectives. They are combinations of our experiences, of bits and pieces of knowledge and ideas that we have been exposed to. We are combining them in new ways. We are drawing on them in new ways. But the broader our exposure, the broader that set of perspectives we are aware of, the more likely it is that we are going to be coming up with something new that we can then pursue and create something that makes a difference in the world. So what you are mentioning is particular studies that show with Nobel Prize winners in scientific fields, chemistry and medicine, many of them, a very large percentage of them, have hobbies that are in arts and crafts and doing something. It is broadening what we can think of and how we can think of things.
I'm wondering, Zarana, if overcoming fear, if it's about overcoming fear and caution, or if it's about the way that we are, the way our culture, what our culture does to kids. Do you believe that we're kind of all born creative, but then for many of us, sort of that's, I don't know, beaten out of us is maybe too strong of a word, but fear of making a fool of yourself, fear of being seen as different, fear of being uncomfortable, sort of makes a lot of that creative energy seep out of us by the time we're adults.
I think that we are born with a potential. Now, what happens with that potential is a big question. There is a popular belief that school kills creativity. We don't necessarily have evidence for that. If we measure creative thinking, I have done some studies with looking at children of different ages from the time they entered the school to into their secondary schooling, and we see a steady increase in the capacity to think creatively. And that makes sense with all that we have discussed so far, because people gain new knowledge, new perspectives, interactions with different people who come from different backgrounds. So that helps them come up with ideas. Now, the question is, what do we do with it? Do we get into ways of thinking, into mindsets that are going to prevent us from acting on that potential? That becomes a big question. And there are some times in our development when we are particularly susceptible to wanting to fit in. So, the middle school thing is real. At those times, kids really are primarily concerned about fitting in. That changes with time. That changes with time with going into the times of younger adulthood and with getting into professional work where people become more interested in their personal uniqueness and what they can contribute. So it's what are the supports then, what are the communities in which people are, will determine whether they can then do something with those ideas that might have.
Yeah, we do a bunch of summer camps, and we get to see a lot of youth come through the shop. And a thing that I've noticed is that younger kids are they are just, it's almost like they don't have a mouth filter, that they'll like say the most ridiculous things. And at some point, as they start to get older into that middle school years, they kind of be a little more quiet. And it's interesting that when they're really young and they're willing to say, I always call it sort of the wackadoodle ideas, they're not normal or your first thoughts, but they're just sort of crazy town. They're more willing to jump into the crazy town, but they don't have the skills to execute on their ideas. And it's a really fascinating thing when you put that willingness to speak, which is an important part of the creation process, is sort of the first words. They'll speak the things into reality, but they have a hard time chasing it down. And then you put them together with somebody who's got the skills to actually implement the idea, but has sort of the mouth filter on and won't say ridiculous things. That's really interesting things happen, because then you get sort of the birth of the really interesting thing, and then the action of following up on that. I always find those to be really fascinating projects.
Well, we're talking about creativity on Main Calling and the creativity choice, which is the title of Sarana Ivchevich Pringle's new book, looking at the science of taking an idea and making it into a reality. What are your questions or comments? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Main Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Main Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What does it mean to be creative and how to harness creativity to make an idea into reality? Joining me today, Jake Ryan, who is founder of the Open Bench Project, and Dr. Sarana Ivchevich Pringle, who is a Yale research scientist and author of the new book, The Creativity Choice, The Science of Making Decisions to Turn Ideas into Action. We invite you to join the conversation, whether or not you consider yourself a creative person. Why? Do you have an idea that, boy, you've thought about putting into action, but for some reason have held back? Send us a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Justine Barrett, who is an experienced designer and strategist who founded We Design Futures. Justine also for a long time headed up the Innovation Lab at UNE. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
I know you work with a lot of businesses, and I'm wondering, Justine, what gives someone the courage and initiative, in your view, to take the leap to create a new business?
Yes, it's a great question. First, I want to say what I so appreciate about this book is that it names something that, in my experience, we don't talk about enough, that creativity and entrepreneurship are emotionally demanding. So one thing I'd want people to know if they're thinking about creating a business is that fear is normal. It's almost always present, but that fear is data. It's not a verdict on whether or not you should proceed. So instead of seeing fear as a stop sign, I encourage people to get curious. What are you specifically afraid of? Dr. Pringle mentioned some examples earlier, like is it about what other people think or whether it's worth it? Once that fear gets specific, then it's workable and you can design the next small step. So I think courage is not about feeling confident or finally feeling ready. It's really about learning how to work with the emotions that come up as you go.
And tell me about working with organizations that already exist or with businesses that already exist. How challenging is it to change a culture or change a mindset into one that's an innovative and creative culture?
I would say it's doable and possible. It's really emotional skill building is essential infrastructure for being innovative. I call this emotional driver's ed. In some ways, it's foundational skills that we were never taught. But when you develop these skills, you're more willing to test ideas, hear feedback, keep going. So organizations that deliberately approach emotional skill building as infrastructure can really make progress on innovation and change.
What do you mean by that, emotional skill building?
Well, emotional skill building, being innovative requires behaviors that are emotionally demanding. You're asking people, they might be wrong publicly. They might have an idea that fails, or they might have to speak up without knowing the answer. And so emotional skill building is about learning the gives you the capacity to stay engaged instead of shutting down. So when you're facing something like fear or confidence, you can actually get better at that.
Well, Justine, thank you so much for calling in and being part of the conversation. Justine Barrett is founder of We Design Futures. Thank you. And I'm wondering, I'm listening to Justine, Jake, and I'm thinking about, this is maybe kind of a meta question, but we're talking about creativity. I've asked Justine about people who start a business. You started the makerspace, and I'm wondering about the courage it took to do that. How did you... were you ever afraid?
Totally, yeah.
To start the Open Bench Project, and how did you deal with that?
Uh, Well, it's funny to really bring it back to what the creating process is. I was basically meeting with a bunch of people who kept, we were really in sort of the first phase of making, which I always refer to just the storytelling part of it because words are cheap. But we just kept talking, and it really came down to me walking to one of those meetings to with those people and just deciding that I was going to change my language from "I'm thinking about starting a makerspace" to "I am starting a makerspace." And I just got rid of the word "thinking" and decided I was just gonna, it was ready, it was time to take action. And as soon as I took action, I sort of leaned forward and trusted that my foot would get there before my nose. I was off running, and you know, there were, and there still is plenty of times of nervousness that comes with running a business or you know, really doing anything that is an ongoing pursuit. But you just, you know, go one step at a time and work out the little detail that you're struggling with. And it, I don't know, the time passes and the thing becomes more real the more you go. But yeah, it was absolutely nerve-wracking. You just, you know, trust that it's going to work itself out. You'll figure
And
it out.
Sorana, when you listen to Jake, what are you thinking?
I was listening to Justine. Thank you, Justine, for bringing up the emotional side of creativity, and thank you, Jake, for sharing how that just change in one word can change the perspective. Scientists think of emotions as information, and that seems very cold because we experience emotions as hot, and but they are both, and. By learning about them, that skill building that Justine was talking about, we can realize that we have greater agency in relation to them, although experientially they seem to be automatic. So if we learn that there are some connections between how we feel and how we best think into those states, we can use it. To give you an example, because that seems very abstract. When we are in very positive, happy, energized moods, we can be really playful. We can see possibilities. We can, you know, say stuff out loud without great censorship. And that is great for coming up with new ideas and quickly brainstorming something. But then at other times when we are more subdued and when we are in a more unpleasant mood, we are really good at critical thinking because we can see everything that is wrong with the world. And once you know that that connection exists as a as an attribute of human psychology, you can use it. You can use it purposefully. And I use it purposefully in how I organize my work. So I know that I am not a morning person. I know that in the morning I am in not sunny moods, let's say, and that is a gross understatement. But I organize my day so that the first thing in the morning that I do is deal with my writing or my work that needs a critical eye. And I can find all the potential issues. And part of the critical and creative process is improving things we are doing. So it's not that those are not the times to be creative, it is times to make your creative work better.
I would like to follow on with a comment about emotional response that I see here. So I do a bunch of classes where we teach woodworking, and in that class we have a design night where we take the scary sheet of white paper out, and usually I'm trying to get my students to get, it's funny, I use this term that I call quiver lip, which is like that moment just before you cry. Like I want to push you right to the point where, like, I don't think I can do it. And then by the end of class, when they've done the thing that they didn't think was possible and they feel like really, really proud of themselves, I really like stopping and saying, "Remember that quiver lip moment? Remember when you didn't think this was possible? The next time you feel that, remember this moment right now when you feel amazing that you did the thing, because they are connected." I think it's a really important thing to be able to revisit that experience of self-doubt and unsurety that starts this whole process. Because if you're not, like Zoran was saying, if you don't become, it's not like you're being comfortable in the discomfort, but if you don't learn how to manage that one moment, then it tends to stop you.
And I love how you, I love, first of all, the quiver lip phrase. I'm totally going to use it now. And that is how you build confidence, by going through with action, then stepping back and saying, hey, I have done this. If I have done it this one time, in the future, chances are I'll be able to do it in a different context. We learn confidence. Confidence is not something that comes prepackaged in, you know, we take it off a shelf. It is something that is built.
Yeah.
We'll go to Lucille, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Lucille. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, this is a similar thought. My mom was pre-TV generation, and she always told me, with little children, you put them out on the playground nowadays, and they just stand there. You have to show children how to be creative and how to play and how to do, draw or paint or whatever. You have to show them. Once you show them, they just take off with it, and they just use their own little imaginations.
Yeah, Lucille, thank you. Thoughts?
So sometimes we, when in a couple of our summer camp experiences with the kids, we have to get a group of 12 kids to agree to do the same creative activity together. So we have this process that we go through where we've like, we do this big divergent thinking exercise where we come up with a ton of ideas and then we have to whittle it down. And I'm like, okay, kids, we need 100 ideas. And that like paralyzes them. And they're like afraid to come up with stuff. So I'll just start saying the most ridiculous things to just show that it's totally okay to say dumb things. Because if we're going to come up with 100 things and then kill 99 of those things, almost everything here is just destined to be ridiculous. So I agree. Sometimes modeling is a wonderful way to, and I even do that with the adult members here. Just, you know, showing that you're able to just like be ridiculous is really helpful for people.
And by doing that,
oh, go ahead, Dr. Pringle.
By doing that, we give people permission to go places that they would otherwise censor.
Yeah.
I have an email here from Michael, who is listening from California. Michael writes, I am an architect, and I am devoted to developing design solutions. My problem is that I overthink all the options and the pros and the cons of each variable. How can I stop or reduce the amount of weighing the pros and cons and get on with making a decision? Oh, boy, Zoran, I bet a whole bunch of people relate to this.
We are conditioned by years of education, by everything, to just take pros and cons and be very critical about things. And yeah, it can be decision paralysis can happen. There we talked about the social side of creativity. Creativity is social by its very definition. We tend to get into that paralysis when we are alone, and when we are alone and when we are in our heads, because we can see everything and we can see nothing. And these are the times when we bring in other people, and other people who are going to have different perspectives that can help us realize, well, this is done. This work that we still keep obsessing over, it's actually done. We are going to see it with their reaction, or they are going to give us feedback that was that one little bit that was missing for us to be able to accept a particular option.
Yeah, we see that here too, of people who sometimes you refer to it as not being able to ship your thing. They can't let it go. And I think that really just comes down to understanding what your goals are. Because, you know, there's a sort of a common old saying that, you know, mathematicians get paid to make it right and engineers get paid to make it right enough. So you have to really understand what is it you're trying to accomplish here, because there's always something more that can be done with a thing. You just have to understand what is it you're trying to accomplish, and, you know, when is it done enough that you can, you know, you're never going to get it done. Eventually you abandon it because there's always something else that can be done on the thing. And you just have to understand what your tolerance is and what your goals are.
Yeah. I would say, as a journalist, deadlines are my saving grace from overthinking. Totally. A deadline is a deadline, whether you're ready or
we're
not.
We have a sculpture challenge going on in the shop right now, and there are little two-week blitzes where you have, you know, we put up a new prompt, everybody can play, you have 2 weeks to create your sculpture, and when it's over, it's done, and a new prompt comes up. And I think that having a deadline is a good practice. It's if anything, it's going to help people learn how to let go and move on to the next thing.
I'll go to Deborah, who's calling from Brooklyn. Hi, Deborah. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling because I have a concern that what I'm hearing is, we get ideas and then we use these ideas to make things. And we have to think about things very hard, and that's the creative process. But I think that there's an important step that, for me, I would not be able to paint or make the things that I do, which is that first I have to have a response, an impulse that I derive through my heart, not my head, through the feeling world. And that comes first. And from that, then I can fiddle around with it with my thinking. But it's funny, because you're talking about this right now, I think that the thinking kills something in the finished object or the partially finished object, which is what we call overthinking. And the way to avoid that, I think, for me, is to dwell in that impulse, in that response to something I see, something I hear, something I read, whatever, to dwell in that and sort of brood that for quite a while before it's powerful and clear enough so that then, without thinking, I can do it. The thinking, I think, is technique. It's not.
And Deborah, are you a painter?
Yeah, I'm a painter. I've taught painting. I'm a therapeutic painter, which means that I can paint with people who even have biological illness. In Europe, I can be prescribed. In this country, you know, not so much.
Interesting. And Deborah, what you're saying kind of reminds me of, I'm always telling my kids to trust the subconscious, to let their subconscious work on things. Sarana, go ahead. And what's your response to Deborah's thoughts?
I very much agree with what Deborah is saying. And here again, we are talking about that emotional side of creativity. Mm-hmm. So we have touched upon it a little bit. What Deborah is saying is drawing on that emotion for motivation, of noticing your reactions that then become part of inspiration. And this does not only, we sometimes think of, yes, art is expressing emotions and therefore that applies to art. And in Deborah's case, it is specifically about art. But it is not always about art. There are people who are starting companies because they have noticed something that is frustrating in the world. I read a story, listened to the interview with the founder of Instacart. He hated everything about the grocery shopping experience. And this frustration with how grocery stores were organized, where things are, and how you have to wait in line in the at the register, ended up being a motivation for creation of his company. Curiosity is a great motivator too, where People see connections in the world that other people do not dwell on them and then use them as fuel and use them as inspiration.
Deborah, thank you so much for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about creativity. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about the science behind creativity and getting your ideas transformed into reality. With me, Yale researcher Dr. Zorana Ivchevich Pringle, whose new book is The Creativity Choice, The Science of Making Decisions and Turn Ideas into Action. And Jake Ryan, who is founder of the Portland makerspace called The Open Bench Project. You can share your comments and questions. If you're quick, send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Warren. Warren writes, I lead workshops in material studies at Haystack School in Maine and offer a problem to students to make something without thinking in advance about what it is you want to make. I offer students a group of materials that in and of themselves create a relationship to one another that cause ideas and objects to emerge uniquely from each student. Manual intelligence comes into play where the materials in a way suggest how they can be used. And Jake, I'm wondering what you think about Warren's workshops and just the idea of when he says manual intelligence, having your hands on something, having your eyes on something, sensing that thing.
Oh, well, I mean, one, I got totally sucked into his prompt of making something without thinking about what I'm going to make before I'm going to do it. And how I immediately started like trying to do that in my head.
I caught you in a daydream basically by asking you a question.
He just like swept me off my feet with that prompt, which is great. Sometimes materials, they'll speak to you and they want to work a certain way, and different materials have different material qualities. You can totally listen to them. There's a lot of ways to do a thing. I don't really know. I want to like go play with that that prompt. I want to see exactly what that does for me to do that.
About just giving yourself some sort of exercise to make yourself be creative in some way.
I really love this this story and this prompt. It reminded me of a study that was done with designers, where a group of designers was given a set of materials and a task, a design task. And they can manipulate these materials like they normally would. And then another group of designers was given the materials, but they were not allowed to, in the study, to manipulate the materials. So that physical embodied component was removed, and it had great consequences. Mm. They were not able to create as creative designs as those who could manipulate them. There is something embodied, something physical, something that emerges from exploring the physicality of materials. And the caller was really drawing on that. You start with what in science we call problem finding. And that is a process of not actually finding, but exploring, of touching, comparing, manipulating, and through that process, emerging.
Yeah, that was funny because I got thinking about what Zorana was saying about the definition of creativity in the part unique and useful or functional in a way, and to have an exploration where you are just, I don't know, exploring like that kind of, I think maybe the thing that got me was that it undercuts in some way the useful, because it is pure exploration. And maybe that is the thing that you're trying to accomplish, is just learn about the materials. But even then, I'm sort of starting off with a goal, which is to learn about the materials. And I just have a really hard time for myself starting the action with no goal, and seeing, like, I don't even know what the action would be other than to just sort of start moving my body. I don't know how it would go.
Yeah, we'll go to Jennifer calling from Kennebunkport. Hi, Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to really talk about intuition and the role that intuition plays, similar to coming from the heart in terms of idea generation. We're learning through programs like the telepathy tapes that when we can bypass the left brain, the executive function, and be in a state of play, in a state of awe or wonder, or out in the landscape, that intuitive hits happen to us at much regular, more frequent occasions. And I'm just curious what the panelists think about the role of intuition, because I know that there's a whole scientific approach. I'm an engineer, I have a master's degree in engineering, but I'm also a poet, a writer, a songwriter, and I've designed hundreds of workshops. And so it's that sense of play, experimentation, the not needing to get it right, the intuition. So that role, I'm just curious what the panelists might think about that.
Dr. Pringle.
Play is developmentally the first form of creativity we have. Mm-hmm. And you see that with children pretend playing. If you have a chance of observing a child, you're going to see it immediately. In our creative process, when it becomes most successful, it involves an element of play. Now, there are people who are going to use the word play, and others who are going to use the word experimentation, whatever word really works best for you. But it is essentially a process when you are focusing on the nature of your problem. You are not pre-deciding of exactly what you are going to do and then just executing. You are exploring possibilities, different perspectives, different ways of getting started.
Yeah, sometimes we refer to that as a ready, shoot, aim project. You like do the thing and then figure out what it is that you did after you did it.
And it's in scientific studies, what we have seen, even when there is a common goal, like a goal, okay, now you're going to do a still life painting, people who are most successful, judged by, you know, art professors and art critics, are those who spend most of their time not just picking and then executing. They are those who spend most time in feeling the materials, in arranging them, stepping back, rearranging them, sketching quickly, coming back to it and playing with them. So seeing what are the different possible configurations and ways of imagining.
Yeah, we have an email here from Martha. Failures are the stepping stones to success. And she's got that in quotes. So I'm sure both of you would agree. And let's see, I think we have time for one more call. We'll go to Dave calling from Scarborough. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hi. Just a quick comment. I think I'm repeating some of what you guys are talking about. But I notice with myself is I just have to get started. Lately, I've been doing a lot of woodworking with some apple wood from a tree that came down on my property. And I often think myself to death and not get started. I find when I get started and just start working on the piece of wood, then I start to feel the ideas come to my head more, and then I have to trust them. But my biggest... I have a hard time getting started.
Dave, I think you're not alone in that. And both of, just for the record, both of our panelists are nodding. I want to quickly read this email from Lori. Lori writes, I worked with a film writer who shared how she manages her creative and critical mind. When writing, inevitably our critical voice speaks up during the creative process. This is terrible, doesn't work, has to be changed. And then during the editing process, when the critical voice is refining the work, the creative voice pipes up. No, you can't take that out, it's so good. To combat these voices, she recommended that when the critical voice interferes with the creative process, you say, "Thank you very much for your contribution. However, you are not invited to this party." And the same would apply with editing material. This has been very helpful to me for staying in the moment. So I like that bit of advice. Sarana, we just have a few seconds left. Would you say hear to Lori's advice?
There isn't one way to create a successful creative process. What is working for one person does not necessarily work for another, but they are key things to remember. Emotions are going to happen, and part of the creative process is managing them and using their power. And creativity is social. It is always social, even if you are doing it alone.
Well, thank you both so much. That was so fun. Dr. Sarana Ivchevich-Pringle, a Yale research scientist and author of the book, The Creativity Choice, The Science of Making Decisions to Turn Ideas into Actions. And Jake Ryan, the founder of the Open Bench Project, which is in Portland. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandro. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Maine Calling is